you with, dog?
With the Bucks, dog.
You sure you with the
all
skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog.
Chad Wallace,
dog.
Man, you crazy.
Dolphins? Buccaneers, dog.
Cowboys?
Don't talk about the Bucks, bro. Welcome to Tampa. Home of
this is the Pewter Plank Podcast. My name is Ken Volke. I'm joined, as always, with Leo Howell. And we are talking about the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks and how those very Tampa Bay Buccaneers that we would love to be talking about having won the Super Bowl, how we think they are maybe similar or how they can make some changes in a very important offseason to kind of almost mimic the way that Seattle's done it. I know that that's very common coming off Super Bowls that we're like, oh yeah, let's just do what they did. Well, I think the Bucs are actually in a situation where they can do some things similarly to what Seattle did, and they actually have a roster that's built in a way that they could get to where Seattle was relatively quickly.
Yeah, the first thing that we have to kind of mention is it's not always the best idea to just try to follow the trend, as we've seen with the Wildcat and the read option to a lesser extent, and you know, everything. All the teams have picked up the West Coast offense after the 49ers did it. It's not always the best idea to just copy, but there's some things about the Seahawks that are not just fad things. They're just examples of how to build a good NFL team. And like you said, there are definitely some situations and some instances where the Bucs do compare favorably, and then there are obviously some where they don't. And I think the main position that we should start at, where the similarities stop at, they both attended NC State at the same time, is at the quarterback position. One of the main points of conversation that I've seen following the Super Bowl from Bucs fans is, how do we get our Russell Wilson? How do we get our mobile quarterback? The NFL needs mobile quarterbacks. Look at all these mobile quarterbacks. Look at all these guys who can run. Mike Glennon is a statue. We need to change. We need change, blah, blah, blah. I think it's important to say, and I think we agree on this, that it's not about just getting the same kind of quarterback that just won the Super Bowl, because if it is, then the Seahawks instantly bucked that trend just 1 year after the Ravens won with Joe Flacco, who's nothing like Russell Wilson.
Well, I think it's important to also mention that Russell Wilson's don't grow on trees, that there's not guys like that, that even though people love to compare Colin Kaepernick to Russell Wilson, it's not the same player at all.
No.
I mean, they're just not asked to do the same things. They don't have the same mentality. The thing that stands out to me, and the one thing that I want the Bucs to focus on when they come to attempting to mimic the quarterback position of the Super Bowl champions, is find a guy that's that smart. That's the number one thing that I look at in a quarterback. The two smartest quarterbacks this year, I think, were in the Super Bowl. And I think on the next level of smart quarterbacks, we're all in the playoffs. So that's where I start with, where instead of saying, let's get the mobile guy, let's get the guy who can do multiple things, I don't care. The other guy who lost the Super Bowl, Peyton Manning, stood in the pocket and never moved. Now, granted, he looked terrible in that game, but the previous 18, he was phenomenal. He had one of the best seasons in NFL history, maybe the best season.
Yeah, I'd say, even with the rule changes, I'd still say that was the best.
So that's where I would like to go for the guy who is intelligent, who you can rely on to say, here's what we want to do, go do it. And you know that if it's working, he'll do it. If it's not, they'll make some adjustments, and they can rely on the quarterback to be smart enough to make those changes and be able to win the game.
Yeah, I think that Bucs fans should in particular be familiar with that, because that's what won them their Super Bowl, was having an extremely efficient, smart quarterback who didn't really do anything special. But when John Gruden said spider Y to X banana, or whatever his favorite play is, he knew how to do it, and he did it, and he made the right decision every single time. And like you said, I mean, Russell Wilson isn't perfect. He's actually got a bit of a slow trigger finger. He's a little hesitant. He takes a lot of sacks, which is weird considering he's a mobile quarterback, but that's definitely something that happens with him. But yeah, he's got the perfect balance of physical tools and mental tools. And that's really what's important. Just saying we want this kind of quarterback because it's worked in the past isn't how you go about finding a quarterback. Seeking out the next Aaron Rodgers or the next Peyton Manning doesn't work. You can't do that, because it's always changing. Like, the NFL is always changing, and the players that come into the NFL are always changing. You're never going to find another guy like that. Nobody thought that Russell Wilson was going to be this guy. There are people who are going to claim, yeah, we loved Russell Wilson from the start. People who get paid in the NFL to find the best quarterback possible passed him twice. All of them did. And he started off on a depth chart below Matt Flynn. I mean, it's not about finding some perfect prototype. It's about getting a guy who has the right tools. And then, like you mentioned, telling him the right things to do and then adjusting on the fly when those don't work. Because it would have been very easy for Russell Wilson to be bad with the Seahawks. Because he doesn't have a skill set that's perfect and, you know, never going to fail.
So the Buccaneers have Mike Glennon, obviously, yeah. Right?
Yes. And that's it, actually. Just as a reminder, that is the only professional quarterback on the roster for the Buccaneers, because Dan Orlovsky is not under contract, and obviously Josh Freeman's in here.
So the nightmare that I'm having, I haven't woke up from yet, is basically what I'm trying to say. Because what I see in Mike Glennon is I see physical attributes that are there in certain cases. I don't think they're anywhere close to elite physical attributes. I think Josh Freeman was a lot closer to elite physical attributes than Mike Glennon is.
Yes.
But I don't think Mike Glennon is that much smarter or that much even football smarter than Josh Freeman was. And that's why I continue to come around, which what are the key things for me? Number one on the list now is intelligence. I just don't think we have it at all right now in the quarterback.
That's fair to say about Josh Freeman, but I think it may be early for Mike Glennon, if only for this one reason. And this is where people can get into trouble, because none of this is guaranteed, and nothing is guaranteed to get better over time. This isn't Madden. The numbers don't just automatically go up when you click next season. There's a good chance that Mike Sullivan's offense was just that dumb that it stunted what Glennon was able to do. One of the things that Tedford is praised for, Jeff Tedford, the new offensive coordinator, is that he gives his quarterbacks all the answers to the test. That's what Trent Dilfer says about him specifically. That quote is directly attributed to Trent Dilfer. When you give your quarterback all the answers to the test, that means that you can make a fake smart quarterback if he just knows when he gets to the line, when he sees the coverage, when he's in the no huddle. If he just knows the basic simple things to look for and has basic simple things he can do to change that, I mean, that's a big deal. And as long as he's willing to learn and be coached, and by all accounts, that's one of his best attributes, which is kind of silly, but is his work ethic and his coachability. Those are two of his top attributes. If he's willing to really buy into Tedford, we may see a swing there. Now, we may not. He could just be hesitant. He could be unconfident. He could be scared. Those are all things that I've seen in him that I'm very worried about, and there's no guarantee that they'll get better. But if there's no other quarterbacks to get this offseason, and at the end of the podcast we'll talk more about those, if there's no other quarterbacks to get, you know, I can see him turning it around in that system with an offensive coordinator whose job is not whose job, I guess, whose focus is, let's make sure the quarterback is prepared, rather than just saying, here's the system, quarterback, now go prepare, which I feel like was the Sullivan system and the Shiano system, which was just, here's what we're going to do, and it doesn't matter, Mike Glennon, that you're not Josh Freeman. You still have to go prepare for the same system. Now go.
Okay, so you teased it already. We're going to talk a lot more about quarterbacks and kind of the way the Buccaneers should go, and there has been one very polarizing figure who may or may not have had some issues with dogs in his past that has been linked to the Bucs, and we'll kind of talk about that and the relationship to Russell Wilson, which I can't wait to hear your response to that. But let's talk a little bit more about the Seahawks and what the Seahawks were able to do and why the Seahawks were able to win the Super Bowl, and that's because their defense was absolutely astounding and took Peyton Manning and that Bronco offense completely out of the game and just dominated from start to finish in that game. Literally the first play to the last play, they were incredible. Now, my first thought when I looked at that Seattle defense is I wanted to break down what were they doing right and what kind of players were in what situations to make them do it right. when we had this conversation a little bit before we started this, you started with defensive ends, that that was one of the reasons why that defense had such success. I think it's actually the back moving forward that causes that defense to have the success, but start with why, what you have to say about the defensive ends.
Yeah, I really think that the performances of Chris Clemons and Cliff Avril, and even Michael Bennett, even though he mainly played inside on Sunday, I think that that really accents one of the main advantages that the Seahawks have on the Bucs in terms of defense. Clemons and Avril were in Peyton Manning's face all day, and they actually directly led to two of the interceptions. Maybe it was just one.
One interception, near one fumble.
But they were forcing him to throw awful passes and deflecting passes all day. And I think that that's the main part of the defense that the Bucs don't have yet, because I mean, Brandon Mebane is a fantastic defensive tackle, but so is Gerald McCoy. So when you're looking at, you know, comparisons there, you know, Mebane and McCoy, definitely, you know, you kind of have that area to build from. I mean, Mebane on the year for Pro Football Focus, he didn't even play. He only played like half the snaps for the defense for the season, but he came out with, you know, very high scores in both pass rush and run defense. He didn't rack up sacks or anything because he's more of a space filler in terms of his role with that defense. But he is definitely still more, you know, he's an active guy. Obviously, it was, you know, like Bennett picking up sacks. It was Avril picking up sacks. But I really think it's that end position that's the big need for the Bucs, because they have the setup right now on the inside and at the back, which we both agree on, that it's a perfect storm of, if you get one guy who can win his matchup on the outside, just one guy, you don't even need two. I mean, the Seahawks really had two or three, but you don't even need that. You just need one. If you've got one guy who can win his matchup and get after the quarterback, the rest of the defense could just create so much more chaos. And that's exactly what we saw for the Seahawks against the Broncos, was just chaos, because you've got all these opportunistic guys all over the defense, and they're just ready for whenever Avril and Clemons get after the quarterback. They're just ready to do what Lovie Smith talks about. And that's not only get takeaways, but turn them into scores, get into scoring position.
And kind of when I went through looking at what that Seattle defense was, obviously all the last 2 weeks, the talk has all been about Richard Sherman and sorry ass receiver comment and all that. So I get it. That's a big deal. I know how important he was. And if you go back and watch what Eric Decker did in that game, I even saw a tweet that said Eric Decker's family is wondering where he went. They filed a police report that he's missing since 6:30. And that's actually a fair tweet, because he really was nowhere.
Yes.
I think Darrelle Revis is still that guy.
Yes.
So the Bucs have that, which is super rare in this league. Mm-hmm. That's not something that you can just say a lot of teams have that. There aren't. There are only about three or four of those guys in the league. The Bucs have one.
Yeah, I would say that there's two.
I couldn't agree with that there may only be two.
Because I don't think that Hayden and Peterson, because those are the two next closest guys, I don't think that they're on that level. And I think the numbers show that in terms of how often they're thrown at.
Okay, so we have that. Then you move back to the reason why, and I put this in one of my prop bet posts, and I've been saying it for the last 2 weeks, the reason why I think Seattle was able to have as much success against the pass was not only the fact that they were able to get after Peyton, but also that they were able to take tight ends and completely wipe them out. For three straight playoff games, they took all three elite tight ends, the three elite tight ends in this league, Jimmy Graham, Vernon Davis, and Julius Thomas, and they allowed nothing to any of them. Why? Because Cam Chancellor had a phenomenal game and had a phenomenal season. The Buccaneers have a player of that caliber against tight ends, in my opinion. They have someone who can do that. The question is, can they get him to that level?
And will they use him that way? Which is definitely one of the concerns moving forward with the coaching staff, is that when your primary defense that you're known for involves both safeties running backwards, you know, is that going to put him in a position to succeed? Because, yes, Mark Barron is an excellent one-on-one defender against tight ends. I think that, you know, with the tight ends' defensive success that the Seahawks had, I mean, Earl Thomas also plays a part in that, And even I think even Richard Sherman plays a part in that, because they kind of lock him on one side sometimes, and he'll occasionally pick a guy up. But no, yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a priority, that against the certain teams, you need to be able to eliminate the tight end. And the Broncos are definitely one of those teams. You hear about Demaryius Thomas, you hear about Wes Welker. Julius Thomas isn't someone special, but he's athletic and he's capable. And that's all Peyton Manning needs at tight end. And so it's just a situation where, you know, you need to be prepared to take away any of the options you can. And when you have an elite defender who can take away one option on his own, that gives you a huge advantage against a guy like Peyton Manning. And the Seahawks had two in Sherman, and then the safeties covering the tight end. And the Bucs have two as well, with Revis and then with Barron covering the tight end. So I agree with you, and I think that the Bucs need to focus on that. I think that needs to be something that Lovie needs to really focus on, because that is a weapon, and it's a concern in the NFL. I mean, the Bucs face Jimmy Graham, Greg Olsen, and, I mean, there's no more Tony Gonzalez, but, you know, whoever
they're going to... They'll find somebody to fill that role.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They've grown too comfortable having that guy there. You know, and then you've got tight ends everywhere. Every team has the tight end now. So, and if they don't, they're looking for one. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a key that the Bucs need to, that's something the Bucs need to emulate about the Seahawks. That's something that's important in today's NFL.
And then the last thing that I looked at was the linebacking core, a linebacking core that on this defense, I didn't think it got quite the amount of credit. This being the Seahawks defense, I don't think they got quite the praise that guys like Sherman and Thomas and Chancellor and those guys were getting. But when the Super Bowl rolls around and the MVP goes to Malcolm Smith, and I start thinking, who does Malcolm Smith remind me of? It's Mason Foster.
Yeah, I guess I could. I mean, the positions are kind of switched.
It's not the same thing. Yeah, I mean, the Buccaneers' elite player is on the outside rather than on the inside.
On the inside, yeah. Which, I mean, I feel like those guys could switch roles and still succeed. Wagner could play outside and David could play inside and they'd both still succeed. But,
right, I agree.
But yeah, no, I mean, a guy like Malcolm Smith, a guy like, you know, KJ Wright, these are the kind of scrappy, capable linebackers that Dakota Watson and Mason Foster are, in my opinion. I would throw Watson in there, even though he's not under contract, but I feel like those are the kind of guys. And I mean, even Jonathan Casillas, I'm not a huge fan of his. I think that he was a little bit overrated for his defensive. Special teams was great. But I mean, and he's not under contract either, but these are guys that are available to the Bucs who are going to be, you know, having talks with Jason Light over the next few months. And yeah, I mean, you've got the talent there with the one stud guy that you can assign the tough things to. If you need the guy to drop back in coverage, if you need the guy to cover the tight end, if you need the guy to blitz, you can have Wagner or David do that. And then the other guys are just kind of scrappy. They're just kind of do your job guys. And that's another thing that gets overlooked with the Seahawks, is that they're not loaded with superstars and they're not loaded with top draft picks. They're just well-built team.
They have three superstars, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's
Sherman,
fair.
Sherman, Thomas, Wagner.
Lynch.
Oh, no, I'm talking on the defense.
On defense, okay.
Yes, on defense. Well, of course, yes, of course, Marshawn fits into that.
Yeah,
but
okay.
On defense, Sherman, Wagner, Thomas. And I believe the Buccaneers have Revis, David, Barron. And even if you don't want to count Barron in there, McCoy is better than anything else the Seattle's defense has.
Yes. Yeah, but, I mean, let's just take a look real quick. I've got this up, and this is really interesting because this is what separates good teams from bad teams right here. And this is something that's common with the Ravens, too, if you went through their 2012 roster. Starting defensive end, Red Bryant, fourth-round pick. Starting defensive tackle, Brandon Mebane, third-round pick. Malcolm Smith, MVP, seventh-round pick. Bobby Wagner, second round pick, same as Lavonte David. The biggest disappointment on the defense is Bruce Irvin, who's a first round pick, who often leaves the field for KJ Wright, who's a fourth round pick. Richard Sherman's a fifth round pick. Cam Chancellor's a fifth round pick. Byron Maxwell is a sixth round pick. Earl Thomas is the only first-round pick that's good and starts on the defense. I mean, Bruce Irvin is a first-round pick as well. And then Walter Thurman, their nickel, is a fourth-round pick. I mean, this entire defense is loaded with mid-round picks. And when you look at the Ravens, it's undrafted guys. It's late-round guys. It's guys like that. That's what makes the difference, is when you build out an entire deep roster and you find guys who are just capable of doing what you ask them to do. It's what we were talking about with quarterback. And it's the same on defense. And like you said, that's what Mason Foster is. That's what he's become. He's not a special player, but he's extremely capable. He's opportunistic. And he has things that he does well. And when he's told to do them, he does them.
And the reason is because the talent level in this league, every one of these guys is fantastic. Yes. They're all excellent football players.
Yes.
It's about making sure that they're in the right position and putting them in the right position. And that's why coaching is so important. And I know people like to say, oh, it's just kind of a fix to fire the coach because you can't fire all the players. That's not always the case.
No.
And Seattle, I think, is a great example of that. Like you said, they're all mid-round players. People passed on every single one of those guys multiple times.
Yes, people passed on Richard Sherman 4 or 5 or 6 times in that draft. Because he was a converted player, they weren't sure how he was going to fit. He was too big, he's too slow, blah, blah, blah. He's too raw, he's not ready. He was drafted in 2011, and he's already at Darrell Revis levels, despite being a fifth-round pick. I mean, Revis was a lock. He wasn't like a top-10 pick or anything, but he was a lock. Everyone knew how good he was. Cam Chancellor was a quarterback who converted to defense, and people weren't sure what position he was going to play because he was too big for safety and too small for linebacker and not fast enough and blah, blah, blah. And he's fantastic. He's all over the field. And yeah, it would be very easy for a guy like Greg Schiano and his defense to completely misuse Cam Chancellor or Richard Sherman or Brandon Mebane or Red Bryant. Because you can't just throw these guys out there and just say, go do whatever you want to do, or go do exactly what we tell you to do. It's about figuring out what they do best and putting them out in that position. And that's why I feel like, especially on defense, having Lovie around instantly makes the defense better. Whatever ranking it was this year, you can add some to it just by Lovie being there. They're not going to lose anyone important on the defense this offseason unless someone retires, which no one is going to. And they're only going to gain guys on the defense. But even if they don't, even if they enter next season with the same defense, it's going to get better because you have a defensive coach who understands defense and doesn't just understand his own scheme. Because we saw Lovie evolve over his last few years in Chicago into a multiple defense coach who put his guys in the best position to succeed. He wasn't just rolling out a cover two against Calvin Johnson because that's going to lead to 15 catches for 300 yards. He was locking him up with Charles Tillman. So, you know, it's something where he does use multiple defenses because he knows how to put his guys in the right positions. And I think that's what you'll see, and I think that's an instant upgrade for the defense, and it's something that will bring the Bucs closer to the Seahawks. And, you know, you can even compare it to the good Ravens team, which was a defense that had the right players and put them in the right positions to succeed.
And on top of that, it's not only Lovie that's coming into this franchise that, of course, is a huge part of what we think the Buccaneer identity will be next year, but we also have a new general manager. That's yes. Jason Light. And something that the Seahawks did not too long ago, 2010 to be exact, they came in and they said, new general manager, new head coach, and not only that, they wanted to make a completely new team. They were not going to say, we have all the right pieces here, let's just figure it out. They made a ridiculous 284 roster moves in the first 365 days that they were on the job, those two together. I don't think that's something the Buccaneers are going to do, but I do think that that's a mold that you should look at and understand that this is how this works now. It's not just about taking what's there and making them better. You have to do that with the great players. You have to do that with the can't-miss players, which the Bucs, we think, have 6 or 7 of those can't-miss players. It's the rest of them that is interesting to see what's going to happen and how the Bucs are going to attack this roster, with which we've gone over, and you've listened to the last two podcasts, we've gone over basically every single position, and we see that on the starting line, there's not a ton that needs to change, but it's the depth of the team and the ability to make a much deeper roster and make a lot more kind of useful pieces behind some of these stars that the Seahawks did incredibly well. The Colts are another team that they came in and just completely swapped out their roster and instantly got a lot better. I think the Bucs are in a situation where, aside from the Davids, McCoys, you know, Vincent Jacksons, Levante Davids, those guys obviously have to stay and have to be a big part of the team. It's the rest of them that every single guy, they need to make sure that they earn their position and that there are tons of competitive spots in camp. Bring guys in, let them go. Bring guys in, let them go. Figure out who's going to fit and who's going to make this team as good as it can be next year.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the guys who are free agents who don't have a contract right now, and you've already got a lot of guys who are probably going to lead to roster turnover. I mean, I can't see Eric Page being back. I can't see Nate Byam being back. I can't see Ted Larson being back unless, you know, I don't want him to be back.
Jake, but if any of those guys are back, they better win a competitive job. They better win in before the season starts.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you've already got like 10 guys worth of turnover just from these free agents who aren't going to come back. Daniel Teonesheim is not going to be re-signed. You know, Jamon Meredith is unlikely to be re-signed. Gary Gibson's not coming back. Brian Leonard's not coming back. I mean, you've got guys that just aren't going to come back. And like you said, there's no guarantees for any of these guys. Mason Foster could move positions or could be let go, because if Lovie wants a more athletic, better coverage middle linebacker, that's something he can do. The offensive line has a ton of guys who have potential to move this offseason. I think that, like you said, there's a few guys that are sure things, and everyone else is fighting for their job right now, and I think that's how it should be. The Colts and the Seahawks are perfect examples of that, that continuity is not it's not the end-all, be-all. It's not a completely overarching thing that just always works and always means something. Continuity is not something you just do for continuity's sake. Keeping Daniel Teonesheim as a starting defensive end does not make the Bucs better because of continuity. Just keeping Davin Joseph at right guard for continuity's sake, or even for loyalty's sake, doesn't make the Bucs better.
And it certainly doesn't when you have a new GM and a new head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the perfect time to weed out the guys who weren't playing well and give them the chance in the first workouts and the first camps that you have, and say, I know that this was a struggle for you. I know that this didn't work out. Here's what we need you to do to make this team going forward. You know, Davin Joseph, you need to play better. Daniel Teonesheim, you may have been put in a bad position. Let's see if you can do anything, you know, when you're coached differently. Mason Foster, we know that you've struggled in some areas. Let's see what you do. And just don't hand anyone anything. Don't approach the off season in such a way that you have anyone who's safe other than, like you said, I think that you're about right. I think it's six. I think Vincent Jackson, Gerald McCoy, Levante David, Darrell Revis, Mark Barron, and Deshaun Goldson are really the only guys who should feel safe about their starting spot. And for Goldson, that's really only because of his contract. The other guys, I think, have earned it. But everyone else should be worried that they don't have a job going into next season. I guess Doug Martin, even though he
can argue Mike Williams too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I would rather not, because I agree even with Doug Martin. I would rather that he falls in the category of, let's go, prove it to me right now, or we'll move on.
Yeah, we've got two other options that we know are capable, you know. But I don't think that I don't think that these guys feel like they're safe. And
I hope not.
Particularly a guy like Doug Martin, he can't feel comfortable about where he's at right now. With having two guys step in and do better than he did this year when he was healthy. Mike Williams is in a different situation. First of all, I don't know if he'd care or not, which I don't think is a bad thing. Wide receivers need to be confident. That's one of their primary attributes. And number two, he has no competition right now. They're going to have to add competition for him.
Right.
So, and I think they will. And I think that you'll see a good wide receiver core by adding a third guy, because it kind of lets you move everybody around and actually present a threat which will be interesting to see. But yeah, there's not a lot of locks on this roster, and I don't think there should be. And I think that's a good thing, and I think that's going to create a really interesting offseason. And yeah, they could in theory blow this up because of the way the contracts are structured. There's plenty of room to just get rid of guys.
So we got plenty of time to discuss kind of the nuts and bolts of who we want, who we think would fit, what kind of players and why, you know, receivers and tight ends and you name it. We're going to be able to have time to go over that because guess what? The season just ended a couple days ago and the next season doesn't start for, I don't even want to think about how long. It really just makes me sad. I actually shed a small tear after the Super Bowl ended knowing that there's no football for a long time. But let's just get to the one position that there have been rumors about. Because I know you're excited about the possibility of Kirk Cousins being the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers next season.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's been the talk. That's been what people are talking about. That's been the Twitter conversation is trade a pick, get Kirk Cousins. We want Kirk Cousins.
Can we have Matt Flynn, too?
We might as well. I just don't understand what people see in Kirk Cousins. He's had two good games in the seven that he's played in his NFL career after being a fourth round pick and drafted blatantly to be a backup by a team that had already drafted their franchise quarterback in the same draft. He was drafted to be a backup. He had a good game against the 2012 Cleveland Browns and the 2013 historically bad defense of the Atlanta Falcons. And every other game he's had has been miserable, awful, ugly, bad. Except for the one game where he came in and threw two passes against the Ravens, and one of them was a touchdown.
But fantastic QB rating.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect QB rating. That's why you should get him. As we saw with Matt Flynn, like you joked about, you cannot get a quarterback who has no pedigree and no history and nothing except for one game and just expect him to be better. To just step into this role and flourish. He was a middle round pick who's had two good games against bad defenses with a good roster around him. I don't understand. I don't understand what you see in him. I don't know anything about Kirk Cousins that's better than Mike Glennon, and I'm not a huge fan of Mike Glennon.
Okay, so let's talk about a guy that was a high round pick, has had success with little to no talent around him, and is somewhat available or seemingly available and already linked to the Bucks. However, the past of killing animals may not be the best, but I believe that's probably behind us at this point. Michael Vick, he's been linked to the Bucks. I think there's a lot of people that are starting to kind of get on board with that being a possibility. I know I am, but I'm also on the camp of anybody but Glennon makes me happy. So other than Kirk Cousins or Matt Flynn, I guess, but I mean, so what are your thoughts on Mike Vick?
He's a Band-Aid. He's a temporary solution to a long-term problem that the Buccaneers have had. But I certainly don't mind bringing him in at the right price and letting him compete with Mike Glennon and providing some solid backup. I feel like the Bucs could win games with Mike Vick. I don't like that he's inefficient. I don't like that he's not exactly the best decision maker, and I certainly don't like his inconsistent availability due to injury. But at the same time, I mean, this is a guy who is incredibly productive and incredibly dynamic player, even at his age now, in terms of making moves and getting extending plays and also just having a pure cannon for an arm. People talk about how Mike Glennon has arm strength. That the play that stands out in my mind when people say Mike Glennon has arm strength, and when they also try to say he has functional mobility, is that play when he rolled out to his right and threw that duck that Vincent Jackson had to come back 5 yards to catch on a diving catch around an oblivious defensive back. If Mike Vick wanted to, Mike Vick would have thrown that ball out the back of the end zone through the stands and into the concourse. I mean, he can just throw the ball everywhere and anywhere. It's not always accurate. It's not always perfect, but neither are Mike Glennon's passes.
People on the ship are open.
Yes, and Mike Vick will find them. He's just got the raw tools there. And it would be interesting to see what Jeff Tedford could do with him if he won the starting job. But I'm not going to say that I'm desperate for Mike Vick. I don't think that he's automatically the starter, even if he does sign. But I definitely would like to see him, just because I do think that he could be a difference maker, just being there and providing competition, if not as the eventual starting quarterback.
All right, I'm putting it on the table. Here's the options for you: Mike Glennon, Mike Vick, Blake Bortles, Teddy Bridgewater, starting quarterback next season. Who do you pick today?
Man, put me on the spot.
Yeah, that's right. That's how we roll.
I'll give you one more. I'll rank them.
Okay.
And I'll rank them for next year, and I'll rank them for 3 years from now. This year, it would go Teddy, Vic, Bortles, Glennon. And 3 years from now, it would go Bortles, Teddy, Glennon, Vic.
Okay. I'm going Teddy, Bortles, Vic, Glennon on both of them. No, I'm actually going to put Glennon above Vic 3 years
from
now.
Yeah, 3 years from now, Vic is done.
Vic's useless.
Yeah.
But I think right now the best option for the Buccaneers is Teddy Bridgewater. And the more I read, and actually while we did this podcast, a tweet came across that said that the Texans are leaning towards Manziel or Bortles. The more I read, the more it seems like at 7, the Bucs might actually have a legitimate shot at Teddy Bridgewater, or may only have to move up to 4 or 5 rather than all the way up to 1, like I think we all thought 3 or 4 weeks ago. So
yeah, if
there is a possibility.
If Bortles goes – the ideal situation would be if Bortles goes 1.
Oh, I think the ideal situation is Manziel goes 1.
I don't, because I think that the Browns will take Manziel over Bridgewater. I don't think they'll take Bortles over Bridgewater.
Okay.
If the Rams don't move out of 2 and Bortles goes 1, then I don't think that the Jaguars are taking a quarterback. I know that that's the popular sentiment. I don't think they're going to do it. I think that this is going to sound really weird considering all the talk we have about Mike Glennon. I think that the Jaguars can win more games next year with Jadeveon Clowney and Chad Henne rather than with a rookie quarterback and no Jadeveon Clowney. So if Jadeveon Clowney is there for them, I think they have to take him.
It's long term. They can get a quarterback later. They don't have – I mean, not that I think their quarterback's very good, but they don't have a bum.
Chad Henne is better than – this is going to go back on something I said this preseason because I liked Matt Schaub. Chad Henne's better than Matt Schaub. Chad Henne's better than Case Keenum. Chad Henne's better than Brandon Whedon. Chad Henne's better than...
Oh, I'm better than Brandon Whedon.
Chad Henne's better than Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer.
He's better than Matt McGloin. He's better than Terrell Pryor. All of these other teams that need quarterbacks don't need one as badly as the Jaguars do. So I could really see them taking Clowney there. Or they could trade back. They have a lot of needs. And if they also like this... the LEO position, which is funny because it's my name. Sorry. that they like to run on defense. A Barr and Mac are perfect for that. A smaller guy who lines up way outside as a pass rusher and comes after the quarterback. Those guys fit that. So if they want to move back to 7, that's an option for the Bucs as well. I think that the Raiders would be willing to trade down at 5. Not that the Bucs would need to jump to 5, because if they don't want a quarterback, the Falcons aren't taking one. So... you know, Bridgewater would then fall to 7. But
the Falcons could move too.
Yes. The main issue there is why you'd want to move ahead of the Falcons is because they could let someone move up and take a quarterback ahead of the Bucs. But
right.
Yeah, there are real scenarios where Blake Bortles and or Teddy Bridgewater are there at 7 for the Buccaneers. A lot of people are just stuck to the fact that they've seen mock drafts that say that there's going to be 5 quarterbacks in the top six, and that's just how it's going to be. I'll tell you right now, I will put bets on the fact that Derek Carr does not go in the top 10 in the NFL draft.
I agree.
And I'm almost willing to bet he doesn't go in the first round.
I would agree with that.
I think that I would be willing to put money on the fact that Blake Bortles may not go in the top 10. I think that he's been hyped a lot by the draft community and by writers, but I know that there are reports that the Texans are interested, but, you know, there were reports that the Bills wanted to spend their first-round pick on Ryan Nassib last year. I don't think that any of this stuff is set in stone. I think that the only guaranteed top 10 quarterback this year is Teddy Bridgewater, and I think that the other guaranteed going to go higher than he should is Manziel, just because I feel like some people have fallen in love with what he could be. But I don't even want to consider that or you know, touch him at all in the draft. I don't want anything to do with him. So I just dismiss him from the situation. And I feel like there's a good chance that the Bucs could get one of these guys.
Well, I don't think there's a very high chance of the Bucs take Manziel, because I just don't think he fits with what Tedford's ever done.
And he's represented by Eric Burkhardt.
And I mean, I think they can get over that. No, you're right, but I think they can get over that.
I don't think that.
But I think either that, way, I just I think that the Tedford's problem never
with,
done that.
I think that the problem with the Eric Burkhardt thing is that I think that the Bucs, particularly the ownership, are going to have a hard time being convinced with everything they know about Johnny Manziel, the fact that he signed with Eric Burkhardt. They're going to have a hard time reconciling that. They're going to have a hard time having Jason Light present them with a scouting report that says, here's why this guy's better than his reputation.
I think that's all good. That's good news for every single person listening to this right now.
Yes.
I
think that Peanut Tillman is also represented by Eric Burkhardt, but I don't think he's in a position where he cares enough that if he wants to come here, he can just trade him or fire him. I mean,
Lovey Smith's essentially his dad.
Yes.
So when your dad's the head coach, we can get over that. Yeah. Well, okay, we've done enough today. We'll be back next week. More Pewter Plank podcast coming up a week from today, where who knows what we'll be talking about. But what I will tell you is that we will have to continue talking about the Seattle Seahawks, because they are the Super Bowl champions, and that's hopefully where the Buccaneers are going to wind up next year. Get your bets in now, because they're 50-1, and that's going to go down when they're 5-0 at the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, I guess real quick before we go, because you're the gambling guy, and I think that these are good. Colts 28-1, you got to take that, right?
I would think so. That's a good number.
Rams 40-1, a healthy Sam Bradford. I think that's a decent long shot.
I'll pass.
Texans 40-1. I also like that.
I don't mind that one.
The Jaguars are not the worst team in the NFL. So if you can find not a Super Bowl one, but if there's like a playoffs futures or something for them, because if
you'll have to wait on those.
What?
You'll have to wait on that one. Yeah. That one you'll have to wait until about maybe June, July.
Because they're 100-1 to win the Super Bowl. Yeah. I'd put $3 on that, just on the off chance that they get Clowney and, you know, Justin Blackmon comes back at some point.
I'll house that right now if you want to.
What's that?
I'll house your $3 bet for the Jaguars to not win at 100-1. We'll talk about it later. Well, we'll get more into those and into the most important thing that we think here at the Pewter Plank, which is how do the Buccaneers win the Super Bowl? I think we're still a ways off, and Vegas agrees that it's 50-1. Nonetheless, I think we're a lot closer than 50-1, but we'll have to wait and find out. We got a long time till football, but that doesn't mean aren't going to talk about it all off season. And there'll be about 30 podcasts before the next game, but I guess that's what we have to deal with now that football's gone for the next 8 months or so. So, I'm Ken Mulkey, been here with Leo Howell. We will see you next week, and, go Bucks. Other teams forfeit, scared to play with them. Ain't no losing in the Rimmage Stadium. We made chickens out of Falcons, Cubs out of Bears, kittens out of Lions.